Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 7, season 11. It's an episode that I really planned to start in a very different vein, probably a bit more enthusiasm as I normally would. Normally I sound like I've had 10 cups of coffee when I'm doing these, because I'm genuinely normally really excited to introduce a programme. I'm still excited to introduce this programme, but since we did the last programme to this one, obviously we got some really, really sad news, which we put out, and I've spoke about, albeit very briefly, on another podcast, but we've lost somebody who is really, really special in the world of motorsport, and we don't say that lightly. Henry Hope Frost, of course, who has been a guest, and we put that program back out last week, or rather put links to it as well. And Henry was somebody who I kind of didn't really know that well, but had helped me out on the impossible stupid quizzes that I've done and stuff for the boys. And we spoke about doing stuff with F2 and things like that. And I didn't know him that well, but it was somebody I was actually genuinely kind of looking forward to getting to know him because of just the enthusiasm he had for sport. And he was always very, very keen to share something as opposed to tell you something. And I think that's a really, really great way of being, is sharing as opposed to telling. It's such a nice way to be. And Henry obviously had so much more a connection with the other two guys, with Jack and Ryan. I'll come to you first, Jack. Obviously, you mentioned something on Twitter, and you mentioned obviously even when Henry was on with us, obviously the effect he had on your career.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose quite similar to you in a way, Tony. I didn't know Henry particularly well. By the time I was employed at Autosport, Henry had moved on and was on to bigger and better things. But Henry was always someone I looked up to when I was younger, mainly because there's so few people out there who actually enjoy racing and rallying in an equal measure. And that's something I've always had. Me and my dad, when we used to go out and watch, when I was a bit younger, we'd go to rallies and races. So a little bit of everything different. And Henry was definitely a person who involved himself in all kinds of motorsport, whether it be bikes or cars, and was just a massive general fan of motorsport itself. And yeah, as you quite rightly pointed out, and as we spoke about on the program, he was the person who kind of helped me get my break in the office. I got some work experience through contacting Henry, and you could see the passion even then. You know, he didn't know me personally and didn't know how good I was as a journalist or really anything about me, but was so willing to help me get that step into motorsport. And I think that's something that shows how much he cared about the sport. He just wanted people to be involved. He wanted to share his experiences with people, and he wanted to share in other people's experiences. And a really, really sad loss. And there will be no replacement for Henry Hope Frost, and I very much doubt we'll ever see anyone again with the amount of enthusiasm that he showed for all disciplines of motorsport.
Right.
Yes, shock. Henry has, like you say, very much been part of motorsport for 20 years of my career, because when I was doing the British Championship in the late 90s, it was Henry that was covering it as an autosport journalist. So, you know, I met Henry then, and he moved on to various things through the years, but he was very well known as really the voice of Goodwood over recent years. So the Festival of Speed, the Revival, it was all things Henry, really. I mean, he immortalised the hashtag fever, and that'll continue. You know, he really did have fever for the sport, and he, like I said, like Jack just said, not only racing, rallying, bikes, he knew it all. His depth of knowledge was just incredible. And his passion for the sport, his knowledge, and the amount of friends he actually gave to the sport. I think it's just been shown over the last week. I think it's shown just how many friends Henry had in the sport. You know, the likes of Jenson Button, Damon Hill, have all paid tribute to him, and everybody from club drivers to F1, WRC, with the likes of Chris Meek. You know, everybody knew him, and he was fantastic at what he did. His enthusiasm, his passion, his knowledge, it really came across in his commentary. And it's a very, very sad loss, firstly, well, not really firstly to the sport. It's a sad loss to our world, but of course he leaves behind his family, his wife and his three boys, and you know, it's just an awful, tragic accident to befall him at you know, a relatively early age in his 40s. But the motorsport community has come behind his family and raised an amazing amount of money to help the family on their way. But that won't replace Henry Hill for us.
Not at all. Not at all. Folks, we wanted to start the programme by kind of tipping our hat to Henry, and we can only do what Henry probably would want us to do, and it sounds really, really cliche, but he'd want us to talk about rallying, and he wants us to do it right, and he wants us to do it in a fun way and do it with a smile and do it passionately, and of course, most above all else, but with fever. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about Rally Mexico, and we're going to address, first and foremost, the predictions that the boys made last week. So, Ryan Champion, you went with Oi Tanak.
Yeah. He was going well. He was in for the win.
He won more stages than anybody else, in fairness.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It was looking good and then went bad.
Jack Benyon, you must have been giddy at one point because you predicted Chris.
Yeah, and then he decided to have a few excursions and generally just drive into his own dust at times, which was quite interesting from a watching point of view. Not very interesting from the driver's seat for Chris, I'm sure, but the pace was there again for Chris, wasn't it? He was very good across the course of the weekend until the sort of Saturday afternoon and Sunday, where just a few little errors crept in. And, you know, I think that can happen at this level, but it's also shown more now, I think, in the current crop of drivers that we've got, that you really can't afford to make little mistakes like, you know, you might have got away with in previous years, such as the talent of the drivers we've got in the WRC now, that you really can't get away with little spins and things like that. So a good performance from Chris, but just lacking that sort of edge over the course of the
and
weekend.
I went with Andreas. I don't know what went wrong for Andreas.
I don't think anyone does. I think that was a really odd weekend for him.
Do you want me to tell you what it was? I predicted he'd win a rally. That's pretty much what happened. If I wouldn't have predicted he would win a rally, go on, Ryan, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say we're dreadful at predictions, aren't we? Because every time we predict somebody to win, they don't. And you would think, you know, maybe what we should do is have 10 people on the show one week and all pick a winner, because then we might get it correct.
Do you know what? I like that. Now, somebody picked up on Twitter, who must have been listening to the podcast kind of while the rally was going on as well, of course, who I think it was you that made reference. I'd read out Gary Boyd's facts last week about Sebastian Loeb and everything else. And you said, well, I can predict that won't happen. I knew you were going to say that, but that's fair dues. That's fair dues. But
yeah, incredible performance.
I was really conscious Raya road position, and you know, I refused to get too excited. I've seen loads of stuff on social media and I thought, do you know what, I'm not getting involved because I really don't want to get sucked in. I desperately didn't want to get sucked in, and by about late kind of tea time on Saturday, I was all over it like a rash, it has to be said.
Yeah, and I think didn't all the WRC and all the fans, I think everybody wanted to see it at that point. It would have been a fairy tale, wouldn't it? I didn't expect to see it coming into the rally. Just didn't think he would have the ultimate pace, in all honesty. And some people will say, well, it's Sebastian Loeb. I know it's Sebastian Loeb, but as we talked about, the knowledge of stages is critical. Pace knots are critical nowadays, and he hasn't had that over the last couple of years, and his performance was just, well, it's just a mark of the man, his incredible performance, and he's shown he can be competitive in WRC again, and roll on course through. Let's see
what
there is.
Right, you and I were both relatively probably negative compared to Jack Benyon, because we're talking about Jack Benyon's hero. Jack Benyon, did you make a mess of your trousers?
I didn't, but I was running the Autosport live feed for the event on Friday, and there was a lot of French speaking, a lot of digging out retro pictures of Sebastian, a lot of just general forgetting about everybody else in the field, really, and just kind of focusing on the man that everyone cared about for the day, really. But yeah, I've not really got anything to add to what Ryan said there, other than, you know, what a fantastic performance that was. And you know, he adapted pace notes he'd used on some of the older stages, but most of the stages, including the one that he won, the first one that he won, he hadn't done before. So there's little bits and sections of some of the Mexico stages that he will have done on the newer stages. But yeah, you know, we're talking about how good the WRC drivers are in the field, and that most of them have done the event for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, and what rocks Sebastian Loeb and sort of does a job like that on the first day where the road order was back to being normal again, and he started winning stages. That's when you know that he's bang on the pace and ready to go. It wasn't the running order then that was doing the work. So yeah, I'm all fevered up for Sebastian coming back again. And I did use my stint on the Autosport live feed on Friday to share some of the reflections that Ryan mentioned before. We had people like Damon Hill and Jensen Button writing in for HHF, but you know, I enjoyed turning that on the Friday into, you know, if we were going to have any sort of rally and any sort of story for a rally that Henry would have enjoyed, Sebastian coming back and pulling out a performance like that would have been one that he would have definitely
absolutely
enjoyed.
Right, I'm going to ask you the question. You're of a similar age to Sebastian Loeb. And that's the only comparison I'm going to give you, although you have to be the coolest man who I've ever rang to do a podcast when you were, what was it? I can't start right now. I'm just sideways on Lake in a Cayman.
I mean, Cayman or Lake.
I was literally, and I was Bluetoothed up to it, and my passenger at the time answered the phone for me as I pointed in that direction.
Was it a passenger ride? Was it a passenger ride you were doing as well?
Yeah, well, it's the end of our season for Below Zero here, so we literally just finished on the ice, and a couple of the staff having rides and having a drive round in the cars that don't normally get a chance. If I just open the door here, you might be able to hear a 9/11 rumbling past as we speak. So plenty of fever going on here, despite the fact it is whatever -5. So we were doing a little bit of a skid in a new Cayman, amongst all these aircraft.
Where I was going with this, right, is the fact that is this a reflection? I'm open to kind of discuss this. This isn't me stating a fact or an opinion. This is me just kind of putting it out there. Is it the fact that Loeb is so good, or is it the modern crop are not quite as good as what we thought they were?
No, I think definitely it's Loeb's pure class. I mean, you know, there's no two ways about it. Sebastian Ogier has had the measure of the current crop. I mean, let's not beat about the bush with that. He has dominated the current crop of drivers, but there's no lack of speed amongst that current crop. I mean, Chris Meek, first and foremost, Thierry Neuville, Oit Tanner, Jari-Matti Latvala, you know, all on their day are right at the cutting edge of the speed of WRC. It's just Sebastian Ogier is one step ahead at pumping in the stage times every rally for the whole season, but the speed is there. There's no two ways about it. But Loeb, you know, you don't win 9 world championships on the bounce by accident. He is class. I think he's underlined that, and I think, like I said, if anything, people maybe expected a comeback that would be underwhelming, just purely because he didn't have the mileage. But he's come back and blown that wide apart. So it does show just how classy the guy is.
Jack, you guys have gone today with a front page obviously all about this story and kind of suggestions perhaps a full season in 2019, but you know, we've Loeb has come out and said pretty much instantly, you know, that I know why I got out of the championship, and those reasons still stand.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to see him coming back for a whole season, but it's got to be a story that you follow and relish, really, isn't it, to see him come back. I mean, just moving away from Mexico for a minute, what do you think some of those other WRC drivers are thinking, knowing that Sebastian Loeb is going to be turning up in Corsica with, last year was the quickest car, you know? And I know he didn't last the rally last year, but Chris was absolutely dominant in that car until the problem. So as a driver in the WRC, you've got to be almost defeated already, haven't you, going into Corsica? Seeing Sebastian Loeb come back on a rally, probably one of the worst ones he come back on in terms of not knowing the stages, not having, you know, actual relevant event experience in the C3, and then doing what he did. What's he going to do when he comes to a rally that he knows really well, and an event that he's very good at? It's going to be very interesting to see how the other drivers react to him being there, and how much sort of how much that affects them mentally, because it's going to be very interesting to see how close he is to the pace.
I see your point, Jack. But right, is this one of those ones where if you're doing a championship and a driver's only coming and doing selected rounds, you can almost just let them run, can't you?
Yeah, you can to a degree, I guess. But having said that, you know, he's class. But I think like Jack said, I can't see him doing a full championship. I think he gave it up from a time point. He didn't want to commit that time to WRC anymore. And yeah, and I'm sure that does still stand for him. But you know, it's great to see him back. Fantastic to see him on the pace in Corsica. And taking the fight to the current drivers. You know, you were saying, what do the current drivers think? I saw a couple of drivers interviewed on it over the weekend. I think Thierry Neuville, the best he gave was, yeah, it's not bad. They're doing fantastic,
no,
haven't they?
No, and go on, sorry, Jack.
I've got to say, I massively disagree with the drivers thinking that, you know, it doesn't really matter that he's not doing the full season, because he's going to be turning up and taking points off them every week. And this championship is going to be so close this year. If you look at how it's playing out at the minute, we've got Sebastien Ogier, Thierry Neuville, potentially Chris Meek, Ojt Tanak. We've got a lot of drivers there who are fighting for points. And if the season comes down to 2 or 3 points and Sebastien Loeb's taking that off them on power stages and on events, it's going to be that is going to be something they're looking at very carefully, I'd say.
But, you know, I guess if you're there or thereabouts, you don't need to go and fight with them, do you? You know, if it's a case of first and second or whatever it may be, you know, it'll come down to Jack to I suppose, of who it is, whether it's Thierry or whether it's Sebastien Ogier. But, you know, as Raj just said, you know, Sebastien Ogier does have the measure, it seems, of all the other drivers. I don't know. It's just one of those. I don't get me wrong, Jack. I want to see them all go toe to toe. And as Raj said last week, you know, WRC events now are a sprint events, aren't they? So, you know, whether that mindset even exists anymore, I really, really don't know. But I don't know. Anyway, boys, I wanted to just talk about some of the other drivers. Ogier managed everything perfectly until it came to the chicane, Jack.
This is an interesting one that I'll be following very closely, because if you watched earlier on, Thierry Neuville did far more work to that chicane than Sebastien Ogier did, and there was no sign of a big penalty for Thierry Neuville.
That was where I was going to go with this, because I was talking with somebody about this only this morning. And you know, like for like, it was like a demolition effort compared to what Ogier did.
Do you know, if they want to give both drivers 10 seconds, I'm cool with that. If they've decided that those drivers have gone in there purposely to make an advantage out of it, then fair enough. But you know, as Sebastien Ogier raises in MN this week, he asked about that chicane before the start of the stage to make sure that, you know, if that did happen, then, you know, to find out what would happen. He was the one raising the issue. So for me, that's a very interesting one. And you know, as we've, you know, as there's a big story in MN this week saying that M Sport are going to appeal that, and you know, as long as Thierry Neuville hasn't got a penalty, I'd be very upset if I was M Sport, and I'd be pushing that one very hard.
Absolutely. Was it faultless from Sebastien Ogier? I know it seems like a very obvious question, but everything was managed. You know, obviously he got pipped if the penalty is overturned. It was what, a second and a half, 1.8 seconds away from being surely the most perfect weekend for him.
It was a fabulous drive. We've seen some fabulous drives from Sebastien Ogier over the years, but I think last year, it's fair to say, on a few occasions, he managed the situation to maximise his points, and that did enough to win him the championship. But to see him back to winning ways from his road position to win that rally was just an incredible performance. And what was interesting is he's now very comfortable with the Focus on gravel.
Fiesta, and, right? Fiesta, right?
You know, I think it's sorry, Fiesta. Fiesta with the Ford, with the Ford. I think it's now or never for his rivals, isn't it? If they don't start winning and winning soon and taking points off him, you know, I think looking at Thierry Neuville here, it's fair to say, I think he lost the championship last year. We know that he had the speed last year, but he has got a great opportunity again this year. He's got a good car. Ogier looking, you know, pretty impressive once again.
Jack, did we get to the bottom of what? Obviously, Thierry was on road sweeping duties. First time I think he's been in that position on Rally Mexico. Obviously, there were some engine problems. He had damaged his arm. The door wouldn't close. It just turned into just issue after issue after issue, all in the space of about an hour.
Yeah, there's the problem with the water splash as well, wasn't there? So there was quite a bit of quite a few different issues for Nerval. And I think he liked the look at some of the banks as well that were involved in some of the stages as well, which didn't really help him out. It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think people have been quick to say, well, you know, Sebastian Ogier has won this event four times from the front of the order, and you know, Thierry Nerval, if he wants to win the championship, should do the same. But I think if you're thinking about it logically, then, you know, Sebastian was sweeping the road at the start of every rally for quite a few years, so he had a lot of experience of being able to do that, whereas Thierry, I think, has got a lot less. So it's easy to judge Thierry harshly for that event. You know, I think there were a few mistakes in there and that kind of thing, but I think comparing him to Ogier in that sense of the road sweeping is probably a little bit unfair at this point, because he just doesn't have as much experience of opening the road as Sebastian Ogier does. Going back to Ogier very briefly, I'd say it was a brilliant drive from him, but more mistakes from other people again, or bad luck from other people that helped him move up the order, wasn't it? And it's these kind of things that we say every single year. I feel like I've got massive deja vu every time we talk about one of these rallies after they happen, because there's always someone who's made a mistake who was ahead of Ogier, and there's always someone who does something a little bit silly or gets the setup wrong or has a crash, and it's just Sebastian Ogier just plugging away, isn't it, all the time, just getting the results when he needs to, and it's almost the same every rally.
Yeah, and just before we move on, by the way, any further, Dan Barrett, get well soon. It looked, I don't know whether you've seen the onboards of the incident boys, but I must admit I was shocked afterwards. It looked fairly innocuous. Obviously he drove the rest of the stage and stuff, but Dan took a bang to the head and went straight to hospital, and hopefully get well soon. I think you guys have wrote something about that today, haven't you, Jack, with regards to how soon that they hope Dan will be back, might have to skip testing maybe or whatever for Tour de Course.
Yeah, it should be back for Corsica, they're hoping. So, yeah, fingers crossed. I think the problem I had with the onboards was I didn't actually see any of the onboards from inside when they were rolling. All I saw was the actual kind of crash, and then the camera just went quiet. So you didn't really see how many times it rolled over. But I imagine the impact that Dan had was from the roof or from the side of the car hitting the floor. So, yeah, always nasty to see a co-driver injured like that, and or a driver indeed. So hopefully Dan's getting well soon, and best to him.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @absolute_rally.
Right, again, I didn't want to, you know, I still feel like it's incredibly early in the season, but, and, you know, M Sport, you know, are only 12 points behind in the manufacturers. It's incredibly close, in fact, with all the manufacturers. But Timo Sunnen, obviously, we know he's a paying driver. I think Brian Bouffier back for Corsica, Jack?
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got a tarmac man coming back there but, you know, they need point scorers. And, you know, Elvin has had issues. Obviously, you know, Sebastian Ogier is doing his job. It's, you know, Malcolm's not going to press the panic button just yet, is he, right?
No, not at all. We've seen Elvin go very well in Corsica before. Took a fabulous result there a couple of years back. So, you know, he's just going to reset. He's got to move on. And I think he'll be fine. Yes, okay, he's had a bad start to the year, but he's just got to put that behind him and move on. I mean, like you said, I thought it was a relatively innocuous-looking role. And even when it went over, I was surprised that Elvin went to open the door. I thought he'd gone for the start button and tried to drive it on, because it didn't look that bad. So whether it was a little bit worse than it looked on the onboard, I'm not sure. But, I'm sure he's frustrated. I'm sure he clearly wanted a better start to the year, but a lot of rallies left, a good one coming up for him, and, you know, a good result in Corsica, and he'll be sort of back on the championship trail for M Sport anyway, which is his important job.
Absolutely. Boys, one man I feel sorry for, and this will sound really, really odd, was the man who finished second, Danny Sordo, forever in the shadow. And it was mentioned so many times on various coverage and social media, forever in the shadow of Sebastian Loeb. And, you know, he's had a very, very good finish on a very, very tough rally. One, I think his previous best was fourth overall. And again, even I suppose Sebastian Ogier, you know, he had his originally his issues within Citroën, supposedly with the fact, obviously, you know, Sebastian Loeb had, you know, preference and things like that. But both these men who've kind of probably had the issues in the past are overshadowed again, and probably Danny to some degree more so, because he did such a great job, didn't he, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic job all weekend, especially the Friday was, you know, he used the road position to his advantage, but so often is he accused of being a, you know, a tarmac specialist, and I just don't agree with it. I think he's very, very good on gravel as well. You know, maybe he is better on tarmac, but not to the point where, you know, he's the stereotypical kind of driver you only have on tarmac and don't trust on gravel, because he's very good on gravel, and he, you know, he proved that over the course of the weekend. Unlucky with a puncture, the same kind of rock that Sebastian Loeb hit as well. And yeah, you know, it feels like he's so often the bridesmaid, isn't it? But more bad luck for Danny Sordo, but you know, Hyundai will be very happy with their pace. And you know, I think we've got to think at this point, it must have been very difficult for Hyundai to choose which events Danny Sordo and Hayden Padda were going to do this year. And I'll be honest, I was quite surprised to see Danny Sordo doing the next couple of events. I thought they'd have gone with Hayden Padda, so a little bit of justification maybe for Hyundai that they've chose the right driver, because he definitely showed the pace.
Right, I was you know, Jack very, very neatly set me up for this. I was just thinking about the two boys that did miss out. Of course, you've both been on our program and class them as friends of the show and everything else. Obviously, both Hayden and Craig must be looking at what went on last weekend and kind of, you know, I'm sure from a team point of view, they'll be happy, you know, that obviously respectively behind Dyer leading the manufacturers still, and obviously, you know, Citroën had a great weekend, but most, you know, I guess the pair of them, you know, will be thinking, geez, you know, the people who've got our seats have had such great events on Rally Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But I guess also probably just increases the frustration on their part, because they want to be back in the car and proving what job they can do. But yeah, like you say, you know, as a premier, I mean, yeah, Danny Sordo, maybe he regrets not winning the rally, but at the same time, he's got a part-time program, and to come in and put in a performance like that where he could have won the rally and took a very strong second, I'm sure it's, you know, realistically, his stage of his career, then he's got to be very, very pleased with that. But I'm sure it'll motivate Hayden to come back in, and likewise Craig, but unfortunately Craig's got to sit and watch Sebastian Loeb probably getting a whole load more attention in Corsica, and you know, I'm sure Danny will go very well there too.
Jack, it wasn't obviously the biggest field, we know that, but one driver that screams out to me, who did an amazing performance in the R5 Scope, is Pontus Tiedemann.
Yeah, he's very good, isn't he? He's just a very, very good driver. That was the driver of a, you know, someone who knows how to drive from the front of their class and deliver a strong performance. And you know, you alluded to, there's not, you know, there wasn't that many entries. That definitely won't have been the rally he's been pushed the hardest on in the last 2 years in the Skoda. But yeah, just delivering a strong performance in difficult conditions. And yeah, I think he's ready for bigger things later on the season.
I think so. Right, we had we're going to have probably Gus Greensmith on next week. He was also a fantastic ninth overall, second R5 car out there. He he's going to tell us all about it next week, but he was under strict instructions as well, obviously, to get maximum mileage in. But again, not an easy event to rock up at, very tough event. But again, I think Jack said this last week, these are R5 cars now. You know, we class M Sport as a manufacturer. Obviously, Skoda Motorsport goes without saying, but you're not rocking up with a private car these days at these events, are you?
No, WRC2 has become a category where you need a works car if you want to be at the front, as we talked about last week with Frederick Olin taking the decision to go ERC. They're professional teams running in WRC2, just like WRC. So you have to be with a good team, but great drive by Gus, like you said, difficult rally, and fantastic for him to get a top 10 finish on a world
championship. Very much so. One more mention, of course, another friend of the show, someone we're trying to help out a little bit, is young Tom Williams, Jack. Nice image of him in MN this week as well. And I was keeping up to date with what Tom was doing. I was getting messages from him as well. You know, taking the older R2 1600 out there and just going through a whole host of problems and ECU issues and heat and obviously the lack of power and stuff like that. It was so close, but a bit of a heartbreak, but he got the mileage that he wanted.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a broken fuse in the end, wasn't it? But there was a bit of a heroic effort from Tom and Phil Hall to push the car to the stage. One of the holding areas, wasn't it, I think? Fantastic job by the pair of them. And, you know, they went there to get experience of the stages. You know, we spoke about, you just briefly mentioned Gus Greensmith there and strict instructions to go and get experience of the stages. Sounds pretty simple when you say it, but if you look at Ezepeka Lappi's weekend, it's proven that it is, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. So for him to go there to a new country, very tough, very difficult rally. He's probably not rallied in temperatures like that before, Tom, from what I know of his rallying. So good experience for them, and I'm sure they'll be looking forward to go back
absolutely,
in the future at some
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Boys, believe it or not, we're approximately half an hour in. And I'm really conscious that Ryan is stationary on a frozen lake. We don't want him to fall through it. So I want to do a little bits of admin before we even get to any other business. Jack, is there anything else you want to touch upon for Rally Mexico?
Shall I do one more thing? I'm excited about the championship battle, and I'll rattle through this very quickly. So 2017, at this point, OJ had 66 points. Nerva was 38 points behind. Meek was 39 points behind. And in 2018, OJ is on 56 points, and behind him, Nerva's 4 points behind, and Meek's 24 points behind. So I think that bodes very well for the championship
battle.
But
you've missed out Andreas Mikkelsen as well. He's even less points behind. So why did he...
Well, I was just taking those three drivers
right,
from 2017,
right.
2018.
Right. I was just looking there. I was thinking, well, you know,
Mikkelsen was too busy driving an off
at
this
was.
Point last year, so he's not really
much. Yeah, okay, I'll have that.
But ominously for the opposition, Ogier is a lot more comfortable with his car and team than he was last year.
Exactly. Yeah, makes things very interesting, sure.
I still think Oit Tanak's got a lot to say in this championship. That's all.
Well, you didn't back him last week.
I did. Well, I didn't. No, I didn't actually. I didn't. But I think it was possible. I feel for him, but I think Toyota, Gazoo possibly has had their, you know, and I don't want to put the curse on them, but I think that was their bad weekend, wasn't it? Last weekend, obviously table failure for Oit, and, Jari Matti had problems with alternator failure and, you know, Ezepeka. I don't really know what went on there, but obviously it wasn't a great weekend for him either. So I think maybe they've just had one of those weekends that they just want to move on from and move forward, which so far I think all the teams have had at some point. So, you know, let's see what happens on Corsica anyway. Ryan Champion, have you got anything else you want to touch upon on Rally Mexico before we move on?
No, I think we've covered Rally Mexico. There wasn't that many cars to cover. As we said, it must be one of the smaller entries in WRC in recent time, but exciting rally, great footage, WRC Plus again, fantastic job, great images, and great to see more of rallying accessible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, well done, Gus, well done, Tom. We will be having you both on probably next week now anyway. A couple of other bits and pieces before we move on to... No, do you know what? We are going to go to any other business. I've made a conscious decision, time-wise and everything else. My any other business, we kind of... Obviously, we talked about the top of the show, Henry, and, you know, in many ways, I suppose that would have been any other business. But in true fever fashion, I want to talk about rallying. I want it to be something which he would be excited about as well. And Jackie wrote a great feature this week about minis, the small car, big idea, junior mini series open to reinvigorate rallying's grassroots.
That's harsh, it was.
You know what, we nearly got away with it. Nearly got away with it, Ryan Champion. Trust me, right, there's a little mark being put on my pad now. Go on, Jack.
The mini feature came about by Robert Minisport gave me a call and told me about this fantastic championship they've got going there, mainly the historic championship, which has got 34 entries, which has got to be some sort of record for a single make championship, surely, for rally, and it's absolutely huge. And they're actually at a rally this weekend, the AGBO stages at Western Park. They're launching a junior series where they think, you know, you can build a car for 10 grand and go rallying sort of cost effective compared to some of the other championships that are out there for the similar age groups. So yeah, nice idea, I think, and hopefully it gives people something to think about and a way into the sport.
Right, you've been around doing the Manx International a lot longer than me, but whenever I've done the Manx, there's always been Japanese mini drivers. It's amazing, isn't it?
Brilliant to see, yeah. I mean, they used to come and do the international rally when it was full international status, and they were homologated cars, and it's been brilliant to see the Japanese teams coming over the years and making a almost pilgrimage to the Isle of Man with the Minis, and great to see the Mini continuing. Jack obviously wasn't born probably when the Peugeot Challenge had 60 odd entries as a one-mate championship, but it has happened before, JB.
Do you know what? Right. I remember the Peugeots dropping when we went to the 106s, right, which you did. I reckon there would have been about 40 then, maybe 45 106s at the heyday.
To be honest, I don't really remember how many 106s that they ever got to. I mean, certainly in the 205 days, or 205s and 309 as it was at the time, it was in the 60s. Yeah. And even for the final round of the championship, when we went to an international rally in Belgium or France or wherever, there was still 30 odd even then. So it really was incredible days. And like you said, 106s and even 206s after that was significant.
Well, that's where I was going to go to. You remember this, because I was talking to somebody. Somebody started talking to me about BRC after listening to what we talked about last week, and I was talking about 2002, the first year after Foot and Mouth, after we'd had Formula Rally for a year and then we got proper rallies back, and I was talking about the one makes, and I reckon there would have been about 30 odd 206s, there was about 25 KAs, and there was 14 Polos, and that was just one make championship tagged on the back of a BRC. What would they give for that now?
and a few Pumas in there as well.
Yeah, they didn't really count. There wasn't anyone there. It's just some pot hunter.
Well, you know, the Mini Championship is a historic single make, and I'm pretty sure your Royal Persian class is historic now, right? So you could go do some historic rallying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would, but I think my 205 went to heaven a long time ago.
You've got another 205 you could build there, Ryan Champion.
I have, but that one's staying as a road car, thank you. That's too nice to go around. Okay.
It's staying that way as well.
It is very nice, actually. It has to be said. It has to be said. So that was my end of the business. So, Jack Benyon, what's yours?
Very quickly, the MSA Asphalt Championship relaunched last weekend. It's been on a hiatus last year. They took a bit of a break and reorganised the championship, new calendar, new prizes, all that sort of stuff. It went to Epping. Which is a kind of military ranges that many people will know. Melvin Evans came out of a bit of retirement in the car that he's been in. He's not been in it since 2012 over Epping, and won that event then, and now he's won it again. So he was the first winner of the sort of relaunched MSA Asphalt Championship last weekend, which was good. And then the other one is a question to our listeners, but I'm not going to let Tony or Ryan answer this week because it sounds like we're a bit short for time, Tony.
No, it's okay.
I opened, I've just got the spread of rally reports open in front of me. So Melvin Evans' wins on the left, Mighty Melvin. And on the right is a rally in Ireland called the Mayo Stages Rally, which has this year been held on the Achill Island, I think is how you pronounce it. I hope it is. If not, I'm very sorry, Irish listeners. But that was the opening round of the Irish National Rally Championship. And I know that's a bit obscure, but I am going somewhere with this. The pictures that I've seen from this event are absolutely sensational. And any time they hold a rally on this island, the pictures are absolutely brilliant. The rally kind of twists and turns in a kind of Donegal-style fashion up hills and mountains, but there's always water in the background and hills and things like that. So my question to the Absolute Rally listeners is, what is the most picturesque and scenic rally in the world, and why? And I want to see some picture evidence for the reasons that you've chose said event.
Oh,
and I know Ryan Champion's going to say the Safari, which is fine.
Yeah, he's sure what he's saying.
I know Tony's going to say the Rally of the Thousand Cones, but that's fine as well.
Yeah, I'm going to say Wirral. Euro Wirral. That's where I'm going to go. Yeah. Okay, let me have a think about it. There's so many. Because you kind of go, oh, that one. And then you go, oh, that one. And we know, as Jack's just pointed out, Ryan's just going to say Safari, and that's the end of the conversation. You can't really argue when there's a rally car and an elephant in the same shot. Although technically, the RAC rally went through Knowsley Safari Park when I was a kid. So there could have been a chance of that happening on the outskirts of Liverpool. So I'm just saying, Ryan Champion, before you butt in, go on. Go on, Ryan Champion, what's your...
I was actually going to say it was a rally car passing Kilimanjaro, but maybe that happened in Liverpool as well.
I wouldn't be surprised. Certainly the idea of said rally car probably ended up on something, but still, there you go. Different conversation for a different day. Go on, you're any other business.
Well, mine, just our debate about national championships created a bit of interest on social media during the week, and you know, we talked about our five cars. Was there any other option at British level? Obviously, we've seen the our colleagues in Asia Pacific, and particularly New Zealand and Australia, go with AP4, so try and equalise an AP4 car maybe with R5. And I see there was some other mention of prototype cars as well. Obviously, the difficulty for us in the UK is we're bound by homologation. We can nationally homologate a car, which maybe would allow something like an AP4 car, but the MSA recently took the decision that that prototype or proto cars, as the norm, won't be allowed to run in the UK. So that's what we've seen as Evos, and in some cases Subarus rebodied into Fiestas or Polos. There was quite a number been built in the UK, quite a number already running, but the MSA have decided that they won't be legal to continue, which is a little bit of a shame, because there was quite a lot of older Evos out there that people were reshelling into, you know, shiny and quite exciting cars. It made them lighter, and you know, like I said, built into a new body shell, but we'll not see them running in the UK. So at the minute, we are limited on homologated options, really, of what we can run in the British Championship.
There you go. Jack Bengen, have you got anything else to add before we call time on this particular section of the podcast this week?
No, I think I'm good. Thank you. I think I've raised everything I wanted to raise.
You've got everything off your chest.
I think so.
Yeah.
Anything about rallying that I want to get off my chest anyway.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you've got any other issues, Jack, I'm sure we can...
Actually, we can do one more thing.
Go on.
Let's tweet out the Just Giving link for HHF and his family, which has already raised about £55,000, I think.
Okay.
Which we didn't mention earlier in the show. So let's get that tweeted out from the Absolute Rally page. And if you want to donate to HHF's family and a cause moving forward, then you can do that. And this weekend is the Goodwood members meeting. As Ryan mentioned before, HHF kind of become known for his commentary on Goodwood and met a lot of famous people there and a lot of the sort of historic members of the sport as well. So there'll be a lot of stuff going on there to kind of honour HHF. But the Just Giving page is a good place where you can donate a little bit of money and have your say that
okay,
way.
Okay, we'll get that sorted. Ryan Champion, are you going to go and warm up now?
Yes, although I have to say that the car's relatively warm. It's a little bit steamed up now on a frozen lake. But I'll be leaving the frozen lake for the last time in a few minutes and heading back to the UK tomorrow.
Oh, is your Cayman a bit steamed up, right?
Oh,
it's a hard life.
It is a little bit.
It's a tough life.
But at least I'm not sat in one of the 911s, which might have been a bit colder, but this has returned some heat, this nice new Cayman.
There you go. It's a tough old world, isn't it? I think me and Jack said before we finally got you to be part of our three-way, so to speak, that Ryan Champion doesn't live in a real world. He just lives in a completely alternate universe to people like me and Jack. There you go. He's like our Stig cross with James Bond, isn't he? Suppose
he's a bit like Roger Moore's Saint, isn't he? Just kind of solving crimes and doing spy related activities at one point, and then racing cars and winning rallies at other
and
times.
DJing as well. Let's not forget DJing.
Oh yeah, DJing. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
On that bombshell, folks, we will be back next week. The other two will be back next week. You are back with us next week, aren't you? You two.
Yep.
Happy days.
Right,
you get yourself warmed up. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then I will be back with Trevor Agnew in the next part of the coaching.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Of course, if you're a regular listener, and I hope you are a regular listener, if you're not, welcome to the party. Go back, download the old episodes. But anyway, we're up to our coaching bit. We've been talking to Trevor Agnew. Of course, I don't even know whether I don't think you are a friend of the show anymore, Trev. Sorry, this may sound rude, but you're kind of part of the furniture almost now, so I can't really call you friend of the show. What I can say is you're part of the gang. But we've been.
I thought you were about to bend me off there, and you said
no. Perish the thought. But we're very privileged of the fact that obviously not only do you contribute and get involved in our program, of course you've got a little bit of, you know, a bit of a backstory with regards to coaching and stuff like that. And we thought we'd break it down into segments. And of course we've had some great feedback. We are up to the fourth part of it, which is where are you now? Not literally, but it's your mindset, isn't it, Trev, of where you are you now in your motorsport career?
Yeah, I think it's more in order to be able to improve, you need to know what performance is like at the minute. So putting some sort of measurement on it, ideally, that's the way to do it. But of course, as you mentioned way back in the first program, I think it was in the first part of the series, some people go out and they rally for fun, which is fine. If you're out and you're enjoying yourself rallying and you just want to continue having fun, well, then that's wonderful. That's great. So carry on doing that. But for people who are a little bit more serious about it and want to improve, the first thing we need to do after, so up until now, we've talked about why you want to do what you want to do. And then we've put together a long-term goal. The next stage of it then, ideally, would be put in some milestones along the way. But before we do that, we need to work out where people are. What's the reality? So in other words, where's the line in the sand now? So if we want to improve, we need to improve compared to something. So that's really what we need to cover in this one, Tony.
I think, you know what, I just want to go back to what you just said. And I know I did say it, but I've been thinking about it since we did the first part of this. And then it's kind of just made me think again what you've just said. Again, it's another rabbit hole almost, this one. But everybody goes rallying, in my head, wants to win. They want to go out and whether it's their class, they want to put on the best performance they can. Do we have a situation where people manage their expectations and everything else by saying, oh, we just want to do it for fun? Because it ultimately removes away that ding in the ego that we all suffer from in motorsport, where we've had our arses handed to us on a plate.
It is an interesting one. I used to play a bit of recreational golf and I thought I could be good at it. But then I realised in order to get good at it, you're going to have to spend a hell of a lot of time in the golf course. And put them clubs away for a while, got them back out about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. I'll probably only go and play six or seven times a year. But my goal when I go to play golf is just to hit one or two really sweet shots. Something, you can hear it, you can feel it, you can see it go. And because, as you know, by nature, when we're in this sport, we do, rightly, as you said, become competitive. But I'm quite able to go out in the golf course. Of course, as you say, it's nice to win. And I have been able to win on the back of all of that. But I think you'll relax more if you just lower your expectations and you put a bit of reality into it. And that's really what we're talking about here, is being able to just put a realm of realism into it just to sort of help you with that part of it.
Is that managing what you've got as well? Is that kind of going, okay, well, we've got a nondescript car, we've got a car, it's prepared to the best of our ability. The tyres we've got are the best tyres we can budget for. I've got the best lad that I can possibly get to work with me on the car. I've got the best co-driver I can possibly get. And this is as good as it's going to get for me. That's the reality. Are we talking about that type of stuff?
Yeah, remember what we're talking about here is measuring performance. And that's the whole point of this series is... Then if you've got all of that together and you're organized and you're there, then what you can do is improve yourself. So, we mentioned last week about the biggest competitor being the one inside your head. So if you've got that package together, think of all the physical, the hardware that's involved that you need in order to compete at a level that you're happy with. And you've got a level now, and how do you go measuring that? The easiest way I always find in rallying is to measure in seconds per kilometre or per miles, if you want that, against the fastest in your class or the fastest overall, whatever benchmark that you want to put in there. And, of course, along the way, there'll be anomalies with times and things like that. So you have to be honest. You have to be realistic about it. So you'll get a measurement of where you are, how far off the pace you are in seconds per kilometre or seconds per mile, depending on what it is. So once you've got that base level then, and you say, okay, I need to be fastest, I need to be able to win it, but I need to put in the little milestones along the way. So what is realistic, and specifically, what do I need to do? So the first part of it is, how do I improve? So you could literally just want to go a quarter of a second a mile faster. And over, of course, a 10-mile stage, you can start to see how these marginal gains will add up. So it doesn't sound as bad, you're talking about less than the blink of a second a mile, and you think of those 15, 20 corners in a mile. it's a lot easier to get your head around that. So all the pain you go through from the physical training, the diet and everything else, the fundraising, all the things that have to go together to get that blink of an eye, and you think it's very achievable, and it is very achievable, providing that you go down the approach and you go down the route of doing something every day that'll help you get towards that. The first person I remember talking about this was, I think it was Michael Phelps, certainly one of the Olympians and multiple gold medal winners. And these are guys, certainly swimmers, who get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go in the pool and do 4 hours and then go to bed for a while, get up and do it all again. So their training regime was incredible. But again, he was able to break it down into what he needed to do over a distance in the pool. And it was literally just a blink of an eye over 10, 15 minutes of being in the pool. It's nothing, you know, it's really ridiculous. But it still means that it's little bite chunks that you can aim for.
Do you think there's a I think we touched upon this pretty much in every area that we spoke about so far. Do you think there's an element of age in this as well? Because and what I mean is by that is that if I knew what I knew now when I was X age, is possibly one of the most common things said in all forms of life. But equally, I think it can roll itself out quite comfortably in motorsport as well, and obviously in rallying in this instance, because experience, you know, experience equals seed time, yada, 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 yada. But is this another instance again where, you know, you're a little bit older, a little bit wiser, but you've got, you know, you've got big balls when you're younger, and, you know, again, we're back in that. Can you accept where you are when you're a little bit older than when you're a little bit younger, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I think so, because your horizons will change a little bit. When you're young, you have the potential, or at least, you know, if you're thinking straight, you think you could go a lot further than when you are doing it for 5-10 years, and you start to see the sacrifices that you'd have to make. You know, it goes back to what I said about the golf thing. So, you know, to get the seat time, you have to pay a lot of money. To pay a lot of money, you're going to have to get rid of a lot of disposable income to do that. And is it worth it at the end of the day? So there's certainly a value versus the money, and that will come into play. I think that's what you're talking about.
I think there is, but also equally, you know, I think you speak to somebody a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and, you know, they'll pick the battles, they'll pick a stage, or they'll pick this. Whereas when you get younger drivers, I always get the impression when you speak to them, they're just going to go out. They just want to go out and drive as fast as possible. And they don't know where they are now, and they don't care where they are now. All they know, they want to get to the end of it as fast as possible. Whereas, you know, and sometimes you don't get enough wrong. There's an anomaly where perhaps a young driver has had a little bit of coaching, or, you know, is a little bit ahead of his years with regards to experience of life, whatever it may be, who can pick a stage and go, well, that's going to be the stage where I'm going to have a push. That's the stage that on the recce I didn't like, or, you know, I had to put a bit more work into, so perhaps that's not where we need to be pushing. This stage suits the car a little bit better. You know, a bit more of a thinking approach as opposed to a balls out approach.
Yeah, you're right there, and there's no doubt about it. What I like to think in those situations, most people you find will tend to think the same way. So if you go on a rally, one I can think of just off the top of my head is Dalbeattie in Scotland. So quite a tricky stage through strewn rocks and quite narrow in places. And it's just one of those tricky stages where a lot of people say, well, if it's the first stage of the rally, which sometimes it has been up there, we'll just pick our way through it, and we'll get to the end of the stage, and then we'll reset and we'll go again. Whereas other people will look at that and say, this is an opportunity, because most people are going to be thinking the same way. Everybody thinks it's going to be uncomfortable. This is an opportunity for us to have a go. And this is an opportunity for us to put it up to people. And that's a different approach. Just seeing an opportunity where others will see fear, and being able to work on that is just something, is a change of mindset more than anything.
Speaking of mindset, how applicable in all the syllabuses? I call them syllabuses, makes them sound so much more proper, doesn't it, when we're doing them?
Well, I don't like that, because it reminds me of school, and I don't like hearing about syllabus.
I'm sorry. Topic. Right.
It's fine.
How does the whole old mind games thing kick in? Because, you know, that's the other thing, isn't it? You can have a wily old stager who loves to play the mind games. You know, we'll go and have a look at your front wheel just as he's getting in his car, make you think, what's he looking at? You know, all these things mm-hmm. that happen. Do we find a way in each of these syllabuses, topics, whatever we're going to call them, do we find a way of managing that element? Because we all have it. We can all have a seed of doubt planted. And, you know, whether we like it or not, whether it's tongue in cheek or whether, you know, it's all part of the inverted commas banter, whatever it may be. But, you know, someone will try and do you at whatever level.
Have you, somebody tried to do you recently then?
No, not for a long time. I have actually seen it. Yeah, I have actually seen it, and I've had it, I actually experienced it. And I've fell foul of it on both sides. I've gone out and done quite well, and equally I've gone out and I've done myself over. Raleigh GB a couple of years ago springs to mind, where I didn't need to go and do what I did, to try and get some time back after leading. And or leading the class rather, and the guy who ended up winning, who's a good mate of mine actually, had done me on the first two stages, and he took a big chunk of time, and for some strange reason I felt I needed, despite the fact that I knew that I had another 10 stages to pull back 22 seconds, I was going to pull back those 22 seconds in that stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. In the cold light today, where I can take a step back and have the conversation, I would have took me to one side and gave me a really, really good slap. Mm-hmm. But the reality was, it wasn't a cold light today. We were in a tyre zone, and I went, right, we're going to get that time back now. Ridiculous. And that's what I mean. So I have experienced it from both sides. I do find that part of it really, really fascinating, because it happens, you know, sledging happens in cricket. You know, mm-hmm. I play football at a half decent level at both, you know, and some of the stuff that goes on there, some of the tricks I've played on other people to put them off their game, by the way. I wouldn't want to put in a podcast, but it happens. Now, is there a way of managing those? Is there a way, you know, every part of this so far, I could see somebody having a little chip away at you.
Mm-hmm. That's the difference you're talking about between reacting and responding in a situation. The reaction you heard about, you know, we talk about knee-jerk reactions. So it's something instantly you do, reactive, which means that you don't think about it. It's just something, if somebody creeps up behind you, you jump. And that's the sort of snap back that you get. And we're all guilty of doing that at some point in time. Where you can respond is where you just take a little bit of time to think about it. So exactly what you were talking about. If you take the time to think about it in a more rational, logical way, rather than just reacting. And we saw the classic reaction in Mexico at the weekend when Seb Loeb, they've got the warning light now, so when the tire deflates a little bit, the warning light come on. His reaction was to stop and get it changed. So, you know, he didn't respond, he didn't think through, because that's what he's used in that car. He's used to, as soon as the deflation system hits, bang, we'll get out, get it done as quick as we can. And, you know, he could have drove on, as Danny Sordo did, and got 30 seconds instead of 2 minutes of a drop in time. So, yes, the answer is, what we used as hypnotherapists and people like that, to just talk us through, you know, just think through all the different scenarios you can get in a rally car, such as punctures, such as electrical failure, whatever it may be. And then react into it would be a bad thing. So we just try to respond to it. So take time out and don't just instantly panic, and just take time out to think of it a little bit more logically. So that part of it you can do. And again, it just goes back to this managing your mind a little bit better.
Taking a deep breath is possibly, possibly the other thing as well. Taking on oxygen is very underrated.
Well, it is that, you know, the time it takes to take a breath, and even if it is just a second or 2 seconds to take a deep breath, that will allow you time to think about it rather than, well, just, you know, in situations, just walk away if you can, if you're in that sort of service part banter type thing. And of course, over the years, plenty of people have tried it on us, and it's, as I say, it's how you respond to it as opposed to how you react to it.
Yeah, the ones who are good at it are really, really funny, and some of the ones are really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I feel almost insulted when I get the really bad ones as well. But it hasn't happened for a while, it has to be said. It hasn't happened for a while, but there you go. So I guess the next stage of this then is, I suppose, all the way through this, even though you don't want to limit your potential, you have to be honest with yourself.
you have to be realistic exactly what's achievable. You know, we talk about setting goals, and we can use the term SMART goals, so something that's specific. So, and as a coach, I'll always dial down to what specifically do you want to do. Then some sort of measurement on it. That's why we need to have the line in the sand to start with. We need to know where we want to go. In between, then, we've got a gap. So is that achievable, first off? Is it relevant? And when are we going to do it? So to get those main focuses on a goal. So we've got a gap. The next part of it will be then, so what do I need to do? First off, is it worth me pursuing that? So that's getting your attitude right. Then along the way, you're going to need some knowledge, and you're going to need some skills. And again, we'll just factor those in and work out where the milestones are. So in other words, how are we going to measure it, at what time? So working right the way back, if it's a five-year goal, right the way back to what we're going to do every week. And even the Kaizen approach is quite good. Are you aware of what that is, Tony?
No, but I'm really conscious of the fact that you're taking us into the next syllabus. So I'm worried now. I'm worried.
No, I'm just explaining what we're setting up.
Okay,
but
go on, explain to me what that is, and then let's not ruin any more of it.
The Kaizen approach is a Japanese fundamental of Toyota, I think, were the biggest exponents of it. So if you set yourself a goal and you're working out what you need to do from a knowledge and skill and attitude point of view, then everything you do, or at least you should be doing one thing every day that will help you get to that end goal. And that's really what Kaizen's all about. So small increments, you know. So do something every day. And then look back at the end of the week and revisit your goals and say, okay, is that helping me? Am I heading in the right direction? Now, of course, when we're talking about rallying, as I said, we can measure it in seconds per mile or seconds per kilometre.
Okay, right. So coming up next week, as you've just heard from Trev, obviously we're at part five next week. I'm really enjoying this, by the way, and I know some of you are as well. And as I say, if you've just joined us on this one, go back to the other ones seriously. So next week is knowledge, skills, attitude, and what you need to achieve those goals. So we will come back with this one next week. Now, Trev, before I let you go, it would be amiss of us not to. We've done loads of Rally Mexico at the top of the program, but you've just mentioned a couple of things there with regards to Seb Loeb. Ironically, we didn't talk about the tire alarm on there. What was your take on Rally Mexico, Trev?
Fantastic. The biggest thing we didn't know before the rally was how Loeb would go. I'm sure you've covered the whole third car where he should have been in with Breen there as well, and that would have been an ideal situation. But class is always class. And the big thing that people forget about Seb Loeb was just his consistency. It was incredible. I'd say you'd be hard pushed, apart from the big accident in Australia that he had head on at the trees. Very hard to remember him having any sort of incident. A little bit shaky when he came back to Monte Carlo 3 years ago where he had a couple of pings, but most of the time it was his consistency that just wore people down. And on that note, it was brilliant to see somebody else who used to be very consistent excelling at the weekend. It's quite a coincidence that both of them are doing it more or less the same time. Tiger Woods is back to top form again. He almost won a PGA tournament at the weekend. It was only Paul Casey's brilliance in the last and penultimate round that kept him out of it, but he's put himself in there for a good crack at the Masters. And again, if you've got Tiger Woods coming at you like Loeb and like Ogier now on the last day of a rally or of a golf tournament, and there are four or five strokes, Woods is four or five strokes behind you going into the last round, that alone would rattle enough people where they start thinking too much about it instead of being in a nice, relaxed swing, you know, and everything working wonderfully well. Paul Casey was able to manage that at the weekend in a golf perspective. And I think certainly Ogier did that as well compared to some of the performance that we're seeing regularly now around them. So lots of drivers still making these fundamental mistakes, some resulting in small offs. And I think some of those small offs could have been a lot bigger. But we're seeing the same thing happening from drivers, rally to rally, that this loss in concentration is just, that's what, for me, stood out with Loeb's performance the weekend.
There you go. Folks, as I say, keep sending in your bits and pieces, both to Trev and to us. We will have a read and everything else. We are going to be talking to, we mentioned it last week, because of time differences and everything else. We are going to be doing something with Molly Taylor this week, but it won't make it into this podcast. Obviously, if you got to this point, you've realised that now. But Molly will be in next week's podcast, along with Gus Greensmith and probably Tom Williams as well. It'll be a busy old show next week. But you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter. It's facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. Trev, we spoke at the very, very top of the programme with regards to some of our thoughts on the sad passing of Henry Hope Frost. Henry, probably somebody you've encountered as well over the years. Have you got some thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I don't know if I can add much to what Ryan and Jack would have said, because they were a little bit closer to Henry than I would have been. I first met Henry, it must have been over 20 years ago, in a bar in Kensington in the centre of London. He was a life and soul of the party, and I thought, wow, what a posh name. I just moved over from Ireland at this point, And then I think the first time I spent a bit of time with him was when the rally sprints were on at Silverstone, and the British Championship organised the rally sprint series, and Henry Hope Frost, who was working for Autosport at the time, he was a contributor for the British Rally Championship, he became Neil Wearden's co-driver for the weekend, so we had him on the team. And that's when I got to know him quite well. And over the years, as I'm sure everybody's saying, it's incredible. I've never seen such an outpouring of affection for anybody, I don't think, in motorsport. And the fact that his fever was trending number two in the UK on Twitter just says a lot from the contributions, you know, the number of people who've contributed to the fund for the family. And just the shock, I think that was the biggest thing for me. It was just the shock when I read it, when I woke up on Friday morning. It couldn't be, you know, and that's what sometimes faces it. But as I said, you know, no better life to celebrate a little bit further down the track. When I'm sure we all get together, we'll start to share some memories, and that for me is what it's all about. You know, coming from Ireland, we always try and do that. We always try and celebrate lives. But no doubt it's been very, very hard for the family.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said, Trev, well said. Folks, that is it for this week. Again, thank you so much for the download. Please keep spreading the love. And what we've just been talking about, Henry, keep spreading the fever. A great man. He'll be very, very sadly missed.